Morning. Yes, still morning. To all of you, it's a pleasure to be here and finished up my big trade show here that went on for 9 days here in Chicago, one of the biggest ones I think that they put on, and it's an every other year affair, and that was very successful. And my wife reminded me that we personally will be leaving for the feast 1 or 2 weeks from yesterday. And it does come very quickly. We're going to be celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary year with another couple, Mr. Earl Romer and his wife. And we'll be meeting them out in Wyoming area and then driving up to Canada, to Regina, Canada. I'm getting drawn into Canada more and more here. I have a son-in-law who just happens to be from Regina, and now we're going there for the feast. Some very, very friendly folks. We're very, very pleased that we were going to be joining them because there are only about 100 people there, and we all will be staying in the Holiday Inn for the feast. And so it's going to be like a big family, not even as large as our congregation here. And it should be lots of fun. And then I'll get to it depends on how the weather and the timing and everything is, but get to go out and meet Will's brother and his wife and see the wheat farm that he grew up on. And they have a home out on the wheat farm, on the ranch, and then there was another home that they had in Regina that they would spend the winter in, and then they have another little place out on a lake further north of the ranch house. So don't know what we'll all get to see, but should be quite interesting. Well, the purpose of the sermon today is to prepare our minds for the Feast of Tabernacles and the other holy days coming up. And it is something that is very exciting. It's something that should be stirring us up and something we should be looking forward to very, very much. But what I'm saying is that it shouldn't just be a physical thing that we're looking forward to, but we should be thinking about, as well as the physical, because God does want us to enjoy the feast, as we'll see, in a physical way. And he wants us to rejoice, and he wants us to enjoy the freedom of the truth that we understand. But he doesn't want us to forget the spiritual slavery that we were in the past, because we were entrapped in spiritual slavery and we didn't know it, but we were. And the holy days begin to commemorate the release from Egypt, or from spiritual slavery. He also wants us to remember why we were born. Why are we on this earth? What's our purpose? And what does God have in mind for us? What is our ultimate destiny? That's what all the holy days are pointing to, the whole program, the whole plan, that we are freed from spiritual slavery, why we're on the earth. It reminds us every year. And then, of course, the entire plan of God, salvation, and how we are able, through Christ's sacrifice and the whole plan that God has laid out before us, be part of that spiritual kingdom. We can know what our purpose is, and that we are to live forever as part of God's family. But unless we fulfill all of the other aspects spiritually, we might know it academically, but we may not find ourselves in that situation. We are just exactly like the Israelites. Now, think back on the stories of the Israelites coming out of Egypt, and how traumatic and exciting that must have been when the Egyptians finally released them after all the plagues, and they were giving them all of these riches, and they went out, as God said, with a high hand, and they went out free. And it reminded me of Martin Luther King. Thank God we're free, free, free at last. Now, freedom is something that this country fights for. This country appreciates freedom, respects freedom, tries to preserve freedom, tries to give freedom to other countries or other civilizations throughout this world. It's kind of a, as we're finding, kind of a losing battle in some situations because people don't always want freedom. I don't know. But I would say most people all want to be free and to be able to do what they want to do in a fair, equitable environment. And that's what's important. Because when you have a dictatorship, you don't have a fair, equitable environment. You have people setting down rules. You have to follow these things, making decisions about you or your friends or your family that may be fair or may not be fair. But in true freedom, with God in charge, equity and righteousness and fairness always prevail. And so think about how nice it would be to live in a totally fair, totally free, unencumbered environment. Now, this is the best that we can do here in this democracy. And we're free, but we still have a lot of negatives that we have to deal with. We have crooked politicians and other people who are constantly trying to scam us. You can't do things just honestly, buying and selling. You use your credit card. You always have to worry about someone stealing your information. Or, as I heard just recently, if you happen to go to a restaurant, in this one particular place this happened, you go to a restaurant that's next to a real nice store. They take your credit card. They run next door. They buy a bunch of stuff, come back, run your card. Thank you very much. We took a long time to ring up your card there, but we had some side things we needed to take care of. You were always plagued with this kind of problem. But the Israelites definitely were freed from slavery after 400 years, as promised by God. And God used these holy days to set up a reminder and a remembrance of that escape from slavery. And we were spiritually enslaved. As I said, we didn't realize it. But now we are experiencing true freedom. Although other people who don't understand the truth and don't understand the spiritual meaning behind what we understand and don't see God's plan truly accuse us of being in slavery. But they're the ones who are in slavery and they don't know it. It's a pretty exciting situation. And I want you to kind of think back a little bit. We call it in the church and in the Bible, it talks about the first love. But just think about the first time you came to truly understand about the Sabbath and about the holy days, and the first time that you attended the Feast of Tabernacles in your life, and how exciting that was, and how thrilling it was. And it was like, wow, here we are doing the right thing. We're commemorating God's way of life, and this whole thing that you were beginning to learn was a very exciting thing. Unfortunately, as time goes along, we get a little bit hardened or used to the holy days and the Sabbath, and we begin to go through the problem of losing that first love. We forget about the excitement and the kind of excitement we should have, which isn't just an emotional thing, but it's the realization, wow, this is the truth. And I have never understood this before, and now I do. And I'm keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, commemorating the future that we are looking forward to. It was a pretty exciting time, the very first time any of us attended that type of holy day experience. Let's go to Deuteronomy 16. I'm going to try to read this out of the other... Let's go to Deuteronomy 16, and we'll start in verse 12. because this is kind of a focal point. There was a sermonette, or I think Mr. Shaw gave a explanation here about giving offerings using Deuteronomy 16. It also refers very much to the holy days and starts here. Well, the whole thing is talking about the holy days, starting out with the Passover and going on through the explanation, but I don't want to take time to read all of that. In verse 12, "And you shall remember." Now, once again, let's think about this thing of being freed from slavery as what were the Israelites. Keep that concept in mind. Keep the concept when we go to the feast, when we do the Feast of Trumpets or the Day of Atonement. It's all part of a remembrance of being freed from ignorance, from total, you know, not being able to understand spiritual things, and now being able to have our eyes open. "And you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt," that we were spiritual slaves. "And you shall be," we were slaves to sin, "and you shall be careful to observe these statutes." Be very careful. In other words, make sure that you do it carefully, that you do it accurately. And I'll get into some of that later on in the sermon here about the attempts around us right now in different movements that are trying to water down the truth. Not necessarily say we don't have holy days, but basically saying we don't have to be careful about how we do it. So you need to be careful, he says, about observing these statutes. "You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days when you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your wine press." And as Mr. Fay was mentioning, we have right now we have the harvest time. The farmers are busy out there harvesting the crops and everything, and many of them are going to have to take a break to keep the day or the Feast of Trumpets, of course, the Sabbath, and the Day of Atonement. And they have to trust God to make sure that their crop comes in properly, because they have to work with the rain and all these other things, and it takes faith to do that. When you see the crop perfectly ready to harvest and the sun is going down and you have to put away your equipment, that's where you have to trust God. And here you put in all year long, you put in the work, and now it's time to harvest it. And if the rain is going to come in 24 hours, whatever situation, they could ruin that. And so this is where you have to trust God. "And you shall rejoice." And why should God say that we should rejoice? Why shouldn't he just say, well, you need to keep these days, and you need to be there at church, and I want you there on time, and I don't want any kids making noise, and I don't want any problems, okay? And pay attention what I'm saying to you, see? Why didn't he say that? He doesn't talk about even going to church here particularly. But he says, "You shall rejoice in your feast. And you and your son and your daughter and your manservant and your maidservant and the Levite and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates. 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast to the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses." And that's interesting, because if God said, if he had stated a specific place, that would be a little bit difficult through thousands of years to continue to go back to that same place. So he leaves this open. It's wherever I choose to place my name at the particular time. Now, this is just a side note, and I will show. We'll read some scriptures here to support this. But you will find that we did this in years past. Back in the '60s, we kept for a couple of years the Days of Unleavened Bread, like we did the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days. However, and it's not wrong to do that. We had services every day. Not everybody could come, but the Bible does not require us to observe the Days of Unleavened Bread the way we observe the Feast of Tabernacles. But I will tell you that the Feast of Tabernacles is very, very clearly delineated, and all kinds of detail, as we'll read, is expounded here in the Bible on how we should keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And there's no question that it needs to be kept for the entire 7 days, plus the last great day. So he's giving instructions here. 7 days you shall keep the sacred feast in the place which the Lord chooses. And of course, God has his government, and that is how we know where we need to go. Because the Lord your God will bless you in all of your produce and in all the work of your hands, so that you shall surely rejoice. And what he's saying here is this is a promise. He said, if you keep these days, if you obey God, not just mechanically keeping the days, but spiritually observing these days and using these days to remember the slavery that we were in, why we were born, and God's plan, he's going to bless you to make sure that you can rejoice. So he's saying, look, I'm going to take care of you. You do this, I will provide the means by which you can rejoice. Three times in the year, all of your male shall appear before the Lord your God on the place which he chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing, and so on. And so it is very clear here that God wants us to observe these holy days, but he wants us to remember. These days are to remind us of where we were and why we're not there anymore. Let's go to Leviticus 23 now, which of course reviews, and everyone should know Leviticus 23. It reviews all of the holy days, even beginning, of course, with the Sabbath. And the whole purpose of all of these days were not only a benefit to us, as the Sabbath was made for us, but it not only just for a physical rest, but it was made to help us remember who God is, to come together with him, to have an opportunity to hear spiritual instruction, to review the Bible, do this on a weekly basis, once again, to remember and to keep in mind why we're on this earth and why God called us and the freedom he's given us. So it begins in verse 1 there, Leviticus 23, and it begins to go through in verse 2, the feast of the Lord which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. These are my feasts. These feasts belong to God. He has instituted them, once again, to make sure that we remember the purpose for which we're on the earth. So he goes on to explain about the Sabbath, about 6 days work should be done regarding the Sabbath, and then verse 4, and these are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. And he starts out with the Passover and then the Days of Unleavened Bread. And as you'll notice, it delineates the fact that the feast of, and verse 6, and on the 15th day of the same month, the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord, 7 days you must eat unleavened bread, and on the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord for 7 days. 7th day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. So it shows what we need to do on the Days of Unleavened Bread during that 7 days. Keep the first and last day holy. Not eat any leavened bread, and have any leavening in our houses. And then he goes on to talk about the Pentecost. And then as we move down further, verse 16 talks about counting 50 days, and that's Pentecost. And I want to come, I don't have this Bible marked here. Okay, let me see my notes. Yeah. Let's see here, I'm on the wrong page. Okay, so we get, and Mr. Fay reminded me here, verse 33, then the Lord spoke to Moses, and we're talking about the Feast of Tabernacles here specifically, and I don't want to slight atonement or trumpets by any means. Those are days actually that they're all part of the same season, because he talks about three times or three seasons in the year coming before the Lord, one in the spring, one at Pentecost, and now this fall. Atonement, as you're well aware, represents, of course, Christ's return and Satan being put away and righteousness being restored. And, of course, trumpets, which is coming up next week, represents the actual return of Jesus Christ and the setting up of the kingdom. But the Feast of Tabernacles is really, and the last great day are really the culmination of that, of this season that we're in right now. Because everything that we do through the entire year, beginning with the Passover, all is focused on the millennium and setting up of God's kingdom on this earth. That's what everything's about. And people being resurrected and things getting straightened out and people finally being given the truth. It's all going to happen at the Feast of Tabernacles. In other words, what that depicts. So all of these other events lead up to the final takeover of this world and all the people in it by Jesus Christ. And that's a pretty exciting thing. God only gives us little glimpses as to how that's going to operate and how it's going to run. So we really don't know all the details, but we do know righteousness, fairness, equity, all of these virtuous words are going to be part of our everyday experience. And hopefully we will be there at the right hand of Jesus Christ to be able to help teach other people the things that God has brought us out of slavery to understand. I mean, just think back. When you didn't understand, when you didn't have any comprehension of the truth at all, you didn't know it existed. Now, some of the young people in this room have grown up in this environment, and you may not be able to think back at that to that point because you've always known about these things. At least you've understood them academically, and you've sat here in the meetings and had to be quiet and drew pictures or whatever, and as you got older, each one has to come to a point where they decide for themselves, with God's help, what they're going to do in their life. And that's going to be quite a bit, I'm sure, the way it's going to be in the millennium, but think back to the majority of the people here who did not understand anything at one point in their life, had no comprehension that there was this plan of God, and did scratch their head to a degree, is why am I here? Or is their most popular booklet in the past, Why Were You Born? Or one of the most popular. If you ask people in this society, what is the meaning of life? No one can really give you an answer. And they'll all admit, well, we really don't know what the meaning of life is. Why am I here? And when someone says, as we did in the booklet, why were you born, and gives you an answer, that's pretty revealing and pretty astounding, because no one really understands why they are. They just kind of push that off, put that out of their mind, and go about their business, whatever it may be, trying to survive, trying to move themselves up higher in the on the ladders of business, whatever it might be. Well, here we see that in verse 33, the Lord spoke to Moses, and he said to the children of Israel, the 15th day of the seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days. Now he goes on, and he explains what we're supposed to do during those 7 days. And we do these things in principle. We aren't out stripping the woods, as one individual thought we should do. We should go in there, strip the woods, 10,000 people, hit the feast site, strip the woods and make branch booths to live in, and then we'll just, I don't know what would happen after that. Anyway, people have various unusual ideas. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and you shall do no customary work. Verse 36, for 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire, just like in the days of unleavened bread, to the Lord. On the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it. These are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering and a grain offering, a sacrifice, drink offering, everything on its day. Besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, besides your gifts, besides all of your vows, and besides all of your freewill offerings which you give to the Lord. Also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep the feast of the Lord for 7 days. So it keeps emphasizing keeping the feast for 7 days. On the first day there shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day there shall be a Sabbath. So we can't really get this mixed up. He's repeated the same thing twice. And you shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of the beautiful trees, branches of a palm tree, boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. And you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord. Now this is a time that we need to rejoice, and we need to keep it, as he says, to God in thanksgiving for what he's given us. And, I mean, God is so generous that he has made this feast, and we're going to get into our wallet here too, before we're done, because God also directs us on how we should spend our money. Now we're starting to get personal. You know, I mean, you can tell me about these things, but when you get into my wallet, now we're talking about something else. So God is very specific. But he wants us to rejoice in the freedom that he has given us. And he is so generous. Now, we haven't earned this, you know. This is a gift. We have done nothing to earn it. Christ died. He did all these, all the suffering, so that his sacrifice would pay for our sacrifice, because the wages of sin is death, and we were walking dead people until Christ's sacrifice was made available for us. And so he's coming along and saying, okay, I'm going to forgive your sins. I'm going to take my son's sacrifice, put it in place of you having to pay the penalty, and you are free. And I want you to rejoice every year and have a great time in celebrating what I have given you as a gift. I'm going to give you some more gifts, and you're going to have a great time. But I don't want you to forget, and don't put it aside and water it down and forget about it. This is a very important time in our lives. It's the culmination of everything God's given us. And you shall take for yourselves, as verse 40, I already read that, I'm sorry, and you shall do it for 7 days. In verse 41, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month, and you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. Now we're getting more specific, aren't we? It didn't say that about the days of unleavened bread, but for the Feast of Tabernacles, we're supposed to dwell in temporary dwellings, which we are going to be doing. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths, or temporary dwellings, when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Now that is a powerful verse. That your generations may know. Now we're getting to the focus point here, to the purpose that we need to keep in our mind when we go to the feast. That your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. and I could add, and don't forget it. You know, that's what he's saying. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. Now, let's get to our wallet. Let's go to Deuteronomy 14. And this is pretty exciting as well. Deuteronomy 14 covers clean and unclean meats. Rather interesting. God goes to this is a sidelight here, but he goes to the effort to list what you're supposed to eat and what you're not supposed to eat, because he made them, and he knows what's good for us and what isn't, and people just want to totally ignore that. They go, oh, that doesn't really mean that. I mean, can you, talk about getting it directly from God, from the person who created the earth and the people and created us, and God goes through the trouble of listing it all, eat this, don't eat that, and then people say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Well, anyway, God does things to help us as humans, and people want to ignore it. Okay, Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. Now we get to our wallet, as I said, to our money. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. Now, there are lots of places in the Bible that talk about tithing. And there was always a dispute among many people as to this thing of there's a first tithe, the second tithe, third tithe, and so on. How do you know the difference? Well, I think it's going to be pretty clear that the particular tithe that he's talking about here is different, as we'll see, than what we would consider to be the first tithe or the tithe that goes to the church. Verse 22, you shall surely tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. Remember, God said, if you keep these holy days, I'm going to bless you and you'll be able to rejoice. And now he gets down to the nitty-gritty and shows how that can take place. And he will bless the produce and the work and the efforts. He'll stretch the money. He'll do all kinds of things that if you've been in the church for any period of time, you've already experienced. Verse 23, and you shall eat, so you take this tithe and you eat the tithe. Now, if you were a farmer, you would literally take part of your produce with you, and you'd be eating that. But it says if the way be too long, we'll read, then you change it into money, and you buy food when you get to the place that God puts his name. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. And this is what you should eat: the tithe of your grain, and your new wine, and your oil, of the firstlings of your herds, your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Eternal, your Lord, the Lord your God, always. The purpose of it is that we may learn to fear God. Not just be afraid of, but have deep respect for and appreciation for what God has given us. And, as he said, to do it always. It's not a temporary thing. It's not once or twice or once every 5 years or once every 10. It's always. But if the journey be too long for you so that you are not able to carry the tithe, in other words, take all of your animals and so on, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you when the Lord your God has blessed you, and he promises to do that, brethren, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money, put it in your wallet, and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. Now, he doesn't give us any leeway here. He said, look, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to provide for you. You need to do this so you can learn to fear the Lord your God. And you go to the place where I put my name, and that's it. You know, and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And you shall spend. Now, that's nice. Now we get the other benefit side of it. He says, first you save this tithe. You pay this tithe or you save it. And then he turns around and says, now, when you go to this place, and you notice that he's emphasizing eating this before God, because that's a very, very important function in our lives. Something we do, most everybody, two or three times a day. When you want to have a nice social environment, you have what? You have a meal. If you have a wedding, you celebrate afterwards by having a big meal and a dance and whatever. And if you want to go out with friends, you don't all eat at home first and then go sit and look at each other. You have something to eat and drink. That's wonderful. That helps draw people together. That is something that God has blessed us with as human beings, and that's part of this wonderful blessing. So you exchange it for money, you go where God tells you to go, and verse 26, you spend that money for whatever your heart desires, obviously within God's laws. Then he tells you the categories you should be considering. That's for food, for oxen, for sheep, for wine, or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. You shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gate, for he has no part or inheritance with you. And at the end of every, then it gets into third tithe, which I don't want to discuss right now. Now, how do we know this isn't first tithe? I mean, people get this mixed up. Very easy. Let's go back a couple of chapters in chapter 12 and verse 17. Now there's a whole chapter on this. Hope I'm in the right place here. Okay, in verse 17. Now he's talking about another tithe. And this sounds contradictory, because here's a tithe that you can't eat within your gates. Verse 17, you may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, firstlings, and so on. This is still in second tithe. You must eat them in verse 18 before the Lord your God in the place that he chooses. And then he goes through the same situation here. And why am I messed up here? Oh, yeah. It's right in my notes. All you have to do is read, David. It works good. Okay, so this is just a reemphasis of, this is what happens when I change Bibles. I don't have all these things marked in here. So we have to eat them. You can't eat it within your gate. You can't take your second tithe, stay home, and, you know, use it for whatever you want. You have to go to the place where God chooses to place his name. Now we go to Numbers 18, and we'll see this other tithe. Numbers 18th chapter and verse 20 and 21. Okay, in verse 20, God is talking to Aaron, the Levite, the chief priest. You shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work which they perform, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. And it goes on and explains more about how this tithe is to be given to the Levites. Obviously, a different tithe than the one we just read about. Verse 24, for the tithes of the children of Israel, which they shall offer up as a heave offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites as an inheritance. Therefore, I have said to them, among the children of Israel, they shall have no inheritance. So the Levite didn't have inheritance, didn't have lands and so on, as the people did. And later on, you see in the chapter the instruction to the Levites that they were supposed to give. Well, in the next verse, thus, in verse 26, speak thus to the Levites and say to them, when you take from the children of Israel the tithes which I have given you from them as your inheritance, then you shall offer up a heave offering of the Lord of it to the Lord as a tenth of the tithe. So they also had to pay 10% to God. Okay, so we know that this tithe doesn't get eaten. The other tithe does get eaten, and it can only be eaten and used for traveling and for in the place that God chooses. Because you save your tithe, you get to spend it on yourself. That's a good deal. Except you only can spend it under the conditions God has set up. And that is the for that purpose is to make sure that we all will set aside the money, because if God didn't command us to do that, you already know what would happen. I'm a little short this year. I'm going to have to eat at McDonald's, or, you know, we'll have to bring along our temporary little grill, and we'll be cooking outside the motel, because we just don't really have enough to really rejoice the way we should. It's just, it will happen, would happen, guaranteed to happen, but if God commands us to save a tithe, then for that 8 days, we will have more than sufficient. We will be able to act like rich people. That's nice. I enjoy that aspect very, very much, because normally you're worrying about getting the best deal and the best whatever. Now you can be a little bit more relaxed. You don't have to worry about the best deal. You look for the thing that you would enjoy the most, and if it costs a little more, so what? We can afford it now. And it's a release from everyday drudgery of having to pinch every penny and watch your budget, watch all these things, you know, making sure that everything is, you know, all the T's are crossed, the dots are in the right place above the I's. We are a little freer and more relaxed. We can tip people a little more generously than we might at another time, and really relax financially and enjoy the blessings that God said he's going to give us. All right. Now that we can see that God gives us specific instruction on not only what we should do, but how we should spend this money and what we should do as far as saving is concerned, let's look at a caution here in chapter 8 of Deuteronomy. Now, I mentioned earlier, and this is a very famous chapter, one that I certainly enjoy reviewing, because it helps us as human beings to remember these things that God wants us to remember on a yearly, annual basis. But I want to preface, before we read some of these verses, I want to preface the fact that I referred earlier to people. There are some movements right now in the religious community which are trying to emulate the Nicolaitans referred to back in Revelation and the warnings to the different eras of the church. And the basis of what the Nicolaitans did was they didn't do away with the Sabbath. They didn't do away with the knowledge of the holy days. They just watered it all down and set it up so that, well, yeah, we have to acknowledge that today's the Sabbath, but if we need to work, we could work, or if we need to do, you know, whatever else on the holy days, that's okay, just as long as we acknowledge that those things are there. Do you have to really keep them? Well, not really. Yeah, we acknowledge clean and unclean meats, but, you know, if you're had to eat a pork chop once in a while, that'd be all right. I have talked with people like this. In fact, I had lunch with a minister, and I won't go into all the details of it, but it was a church that were trying to make the Jewish people in other words, enable them to be Christians but still feel Jewish. And what I mean by that is they would have their church service on Friday night. You may not understand all these things. I didn't either, but I got educated on the East Coast about the Jewish traditions and so on. They had a Torah, which is important, in a separate box. They did Jewish dances, and they did all these things. But the minister himself, when I was asking something about working on Saturday or on the holy, they would meet on the holy days. They would acknowledge all of these things. But when it came down to keeping it, oh, well, he didn't. You don't really have to keep the Sabbath. You just have to acknowledge it. You don't have to keep the holy days. You just have to acknowledge it. They wanted to provide these Jewish traditions to make these people feel comfortable as Jewish people and yet still be born-again Christians, okay, which didn't believe, who don't believe in doing anything, okay? And I was very shocked, very surprised, and I thought that there would be a lot more in common that we would have with this particular group. This was out in, back in Philadelphia. I came away very disappointed, very irritated, because they were, this minister was not teaching the people the truth. He was just giving them lip service, making them feel good, but never teaching them that you actually had to obey. And one of our deacons, who grew up in that particular neighborhood and is a Jew himself, had attended a few times and thought, oh, well, they're keeping these holy days. Isn't this nice? And they believe in Christ, and this is wonderful. And then he was beginning to hear comments about people, you know, working on Saturday and whatever, and he's trying to tell them, hey, you can't do that. And he set up the lunch, and we had this nice meeting and everything, but I came away realizing that that is exactly what God talks about the Nicolaitans doing. And God says in Revelation, as Mr. Fay has already covered, I hate that, God says. He does not mess around. He hates that approach because it does not obey what we just read and doesn't keep the holy days carefully and accurately. It just acknowledges and gives lip service, makes people feel, well, I'm not giving up anything. I still believe what I always have. I just don't do it. Makes life easier. You see the difference. People are trying to promote that concept in principle in various religious movements today. So just be aware of that and be alert to it, because it's a con job. And it's not according to the Bible. Let's start here in verse 10 of Deuteronomy 8. When you have eaten, now this is the pitfall that all of us fall into. And if we've been keeping the holy days and the Sabbath for years and years and years and years, this is a problem we have to be alert to. When you have eaten and you are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. This is, God wants us to rejoice and he wants us to enjoy it, but he also wants us to remember the purpose for which, you know, he set these holy days up. And we can enjoy and we can bless God and we can be grateful, but this is the other side of the coin. Sometimes we get used to it so much that we begin to just, it loses its meaning to us. Verse 11, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you this day, lest when you have eaten and you are full and you've built beautiful houses and dwell in them and are blessed as God promised. And when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold are multiplied, when all you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. You forget how it was before in spiritual slavery, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, you know, brought us out of that blindness that we were in with the fiery serpents and scorpions and so on. Verse 16, who fed you in the wilderness with manna. You can drop down to verse 17. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gained me this wealth. We begin to take the credit for ourselves. we begin to think, oh, we're pretty good. God must be pretty pleased with me because, look at, I've been keeping the Sabbath for all these years. I've been going to the holy days and the Feast of Tabernacles and doing all these things for all these years. And we begin to forget to really, really be thankful, and we begin to take the credit to ourselves. Not good. Not good. Verse 18, and you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth. And God reminds us of this in a very, very serious way if we begin to drift into that direction, that He may establish His covenant, which He swore to your fathers, as it is this day. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, in other words, begin to follow yourself or drift away and water down and forget what God has commanded us very clearly, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you are going to surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so you shall perish because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God. Now we read that God wants us to be careful on how we keep those holy days. He wants us to set the money aside so that we can rejoice before Him. That is a command. He said, you must have a good time. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I'm going to make sure that you have a good time. I'm going to bless you. You follow what I say. You remember what bondage I brought you out of and the slavery that you were in and where you are now and the understanding that you have now and the spiritual potential that we have to be part of the family of God, that we even understand about the plan of God, which the world does not understand and thinks is crazy. If you forget that, if you drift away, if you water down, and if you aren't careful about remembering why God has set these holy days up, then God will have to deal with us, and He will have to correct us. He doesn't want to do that. He wants us to enjoy what He's given us. He's going to bless us so that we can enjoy it. And I hope and I know that all of you are looking forward, we're all looking forward very, very much to the holy days coming up and what they represent for us and how important they are in our spiritual lives.